Welcome everybody to the Simple Actions meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an alcoholic and my name is Debbie. All right, for those who care to join us, let's open with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. We cannot use the racetracks that they have provided. At this time, please silence all cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So I see a lot of faces I don't know, and that's wonderful. But if you're new to the meeting, what we do is we'll read a couple of paragraphs out of the big book on a particular step. Tonight we're on the first part of step four, so that means we've already done one, two, and three, if this is your first time here. And so I'll read a couple of paragraphs, and we have a panel of speakers. We have Steve from Suffolk and Kay from Norfolk, who will introduce themselves when they're speaking, and they'll share their experience and their life on this, how this fourth step has worked for them. And so we do divide the fourth step into two meetings, so it'll be this week and next week, because there's some pretty big topics in there. So we're going to start on page 63 in the big book. And step four is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So on page 63, next we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us have never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. And I believe Kay is graciously accepted to start the discussion.
Hi, everybody. My name is Kay, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kay.
So we're going to launch. I have no idea what y'all are going to get tonight. I've been awful in my day today. I've been impatient and not very nice to people, and I work with the public, and I've had a really hard time doing that in the proper manner today, and that happens to me a lot. So I don't know what you're going to get. I don't know how spiritually fit I am or anything, but I do know I have plenty of experience with the fourth step, with resentments. With all of these steps, actually. And it talks about launching into a vigorous course of action. I don't know about you all, but I don't like to launch into things. I like to think things over, and I like to mull them and take my time. And I did that with the four-step the first time until I was at a meeting, and I heard somebody share that they had carried their four-step around in their purse for 2 months and got drunk. And I didn't want to get drunk. And I immediately called my sponsor up and told her I had written some stuff and I was ready. And this fact-facing and fact-finding stuff, I'm not crazy about that either. Number one, I don't know how to find the truth about myself very well. I think I can fool you all and do sometimes, but I can really fool me. I don't know half the time what's going on with me. And so a four-step was vital for me. I had to get some discipline and try to find out what was going on because I didn't want to get drunk. My last drunk was not the worst drunk I ever had, but something happened during that drunk that made me realize that I was really going to die, really going to die, not maybe die or get sick or any of that. I was really going to die, and there wasn't a damn thing I could do about it. And as a result of that, I was a little more willing to do these things that are so necessary for me to live. And our liquor was but a symptom, you know. I had not been drinking for a long time and was crazy and just insane without a drop of alcohol in me. My selfishness, my inconsideration, my impatience, my manipulation, all of these facts about me that I wasn't aware of were poisoning relationships. Once alcohol was gone, it was worse than ever. I mean, with alcohol, I had a little period of time where I was kind of jolly or happy or funny, but without it, I was just miserable and mean all the time. So this personal inventory was vital to me, and these things about myself were blocking me. They were blocking me from having what I saw you all have, you know, peace and serenity and usefulness. And I reached a point with my alcoholism where I really, really was willing and ready to do anything, even this damn four-step. Right.
Steve. My name is Steve Rocha, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Steve.
And I'm a member of the Thursday night Friends of Bill W. meeting in Suffolk. And everybody's welcome. We're out in the sticks, so if you ever find yourself out in the sticks, just go down Route 460, you can find us. I'm grateful to be here. I want to thank Dave for inviting me. I'm a little bit nervous. I know some of you, but I kind of got off the AA beam for a couple of years there and was just kind of drifting around. And I've begun the process of becoming re-engaged in what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a fervent believer in what we do, and I followed it as best I could, and some resentment drove me away from Alcoholics Anonymous. And here I am. Because it works. So here's the thing. No matter what happens, as long as I don't take a drink, I got a chance of making it better tomorrow. So everything that I do hinges on whether I'm going to take that drink or not. And Alcoholics Anonymous has provided me a way to live my life, sometimes miserably, but I can live my life with a drop of alcohol. And that's what AA's taught me. Usually it's not miserably, only when I'm full of resentments. And so I think it was very, very fitting that Dave asked me for this part of it. And the first time I wrote out an inventory, I got sober November 3rd, 1992 in Chicago, Illinois. And I wrote out my inventory because I was getting ready to get drunk again. I'd been in AA for a couple of years, bouncing in and out, more out than in. And the last time I'd been in AA almost 7 months, and I went out and got drunk again, and I came back, and this time it was going to be different, da 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 da. You know, here's the thing: if I'd have known I was going to stay sober this long, I'd have paid more attention in the beginning. I had no way of knowing that this was going to be the time that it was going to work for me. So I was kind of half stepping it along the way, and unfortunately, the guy that was my sponsor at the time didn't really read the big book, or we didn't follow the steps at our home group and talk about traditions. I ran around with a bunch of AA renegades for the most part, and we're going to do what we want with our, because it's our money, it's not AA money, it's our money, we're going to have a picnic whenever we want, all that funky stuff. I've learned different since then, but Anyways, so because I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do, I was probably back in here about 6 months, and the infidelity that crept back into my life, and the lying to everybody, and it was just, I was going downhill again, and I could sense that the drink was right around the corner. So it was out of a brief moment of desperation that I sat down, and because I was talking to one of the old-timers, and after a meeting, and he said, "Steve, if you don't do this inventory, you're not going to make it." And I was at work, and I was trying to hit on a secretary at work, and go figure, right? He asked me out for lunch. He said, "Steve, let's go get some lunch." And I said, "Damn, what's going on?" He said, "Man, you're going to be drunk any day now." I was like, "What are you talking about?" He says, "Anything." And he was one of those hardcore kind of AA guys. He says, "You're going to be drunk every day now, any day now. I can see what you're doing. You're hitting on all the women, da-da-da-da-da." Because that's my MO. You know, that's just what I did back then. And so I kind of laughed it off and shrugged it off. And sure enough, within a matter of 2 days, I called him on the phone, and I was crying. I said, "Dan, I need some help, man." And he says, "You need to write it out. You need to write your inventory. You never did an inventory, da-da-da-da-da." So I write this inventory out. And it doesn't look anything like it does in the book. Because my sponsor never taught me how to write it like it says in the book. So all I did was I made a list of all the bad things I'd done in my life. It's basically a confessional. And I just wrote it down. And the guy that was my sponsor, Jimmy Holum at the time, we sat in a station wagon, and it was a winter night in Chicago, and it was about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and there was snow. It's like a Norman Rockwell scene. It really was. It's beautiful. But Jimmy was a painter, and he had an old rusty station wagon. It always smelled like paint and turpentine in there. But I did my first four-step in that car, and it saved my life. And I sat there, and I cried most of the time, and I was telling him, and he identified, and he laughed, and I cried, and he laughed, and I laughed. So in essence, God gave me the ability to write these things down to get me over the hump till I got to Virginia. And shortly after that, I moved to Virginia. And then I found a real sponsor who took me through the steps in the book. So the key for me was, I did this out of sheer desperation, not because I wanted to be a better man or grow spiritually. It's because I was getting ready to get drunk again. And I think that's, if there's no better driving factor in Alcoholics Anonymous than the thought of getting drunk again that drives me back to getting active in what we do in AA. Thank you.
Thank you. We're still on page 64. "Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. Business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock and trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure, being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations." Okay.
Going back to that fact-finding and fact-facing process and finding out the truth about myself, my first inventory I did, much like Steve, it wasn't the bad things I did, it was the bad things you did to me. And I wrote them down, and I read them to my sponsor, and I remember at the end of it, she said, "Is there anything else?" And I told her my deep, dark secret, and I was just so afraid that she was, you know, going to tell me to leave forever. And, you know, she didn't want to be around people like me. And I remember her looking at me and laughing and saying, "You know, I don't care what you are or what you did, as long as you're drunk." And I said, "Well, I fit that," because I was definitely a drunk. Taking stock honestly is really hard. I mean, I've written books of inventory, books, and it's like every time it's really hard, you know. This process isn't, I don't know, I don't think you get smarter with it the longer you're around. I think it gets harder. And that's why sponsorship is so important. Steve was talking about a sponsor. I lucked out and got a lovely lady. She was my sponsor for 20 years, and she helped me so much. And we never did the fourth step out of the big book, but we did it out of the 12 and 12. And I'm a firm believer in doing it the way you're supposed to do it when you're doing it. You know, for a while I was a big book thumper and going to beat you over the head with this is the way. I have found the light. I've gotten past that. I think God shows us what we need to do, when we need to do it, and how we need to do it. I've done every crazy kind of thing you can think of in Alcoholics Anonymous. And for a while I was embarrassed and, you know, didn't want to talk about it. And today I don't care. It kept me sober. It kept me here. It kept me in this place where I can, you know, learn and grow. And I think that's all God requires of me, you know, to continue to search for the flaws in myself. You know, I spent most of my life looking at your flaws and dwelling on them and making them the cause of anything that was going on in my life. It is so much easier to look within myself, but I do need guidance to find it sometimes. And my sponsor is very, very helpful in this. She knows me well enough. We've had a relationship for a long time that she knows the truth about me way before I do. And she knows who I am. And I'm not always sure I do. And she helps me with that. So when I write inventory, I write down what comes to me with God's help about whatever situation or thing I'm writing about. And then she sits down and talks with me, and she shows me what maybe I should be focusing on. You know, the character flaws in me that are causing the problems in my life. And I could talk about them endlessly, and will in a little bit.
Yeah, well, the first paragraph that we read, it says, though a decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effects unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. And I knew, I've done a bunch of these inventories, and the last one I did looked just like it does in the book. I mean, almost line for line. And for me, at the end of the day, is I got to be rid of these things. I got to figure out what's wrong with me. And here's the thing, is I've been sober long enough. I've done a lot of goofy stuff in AA, and a lot of things I wouldn't do again. A lot of things that, you know, just I've been, you know, with the big book was my assault weapon, and I'd go to meetings and tell them what they were doing wrong, and I've done all that crazy stuff, and I did it at the district and all that goofy stuff. And the bottom line is this: is that if what you're doing is working for you, keep doing it. Simple enough. The first inventory took. I wouldn't recommend anybody else do that, but it worked for me. And I think Kay nailed it. That God put these people in my life exactly when I needed them. When I finally got a sponsor that said, Steve, and we sat at his kitchen table and he patted his big book. He said, kid, this is all we got. And if this ain't what you're looking for, hit the bricks. It's exactly what I needed to hear when he said it to me. If he'd have said it to me 6 months before or a year before, I probably would have walked away. But I was desperate for growth in my life. And so I can only stay in AA. I don't know about anybody else, but I can only stay in AA for so long before I got to do something. Because life catches up with me. And the thing of it is, in early sobriety, that's why we have such a high failure rate in a sense, because my wreckage is like a wake behind a boat. And it doesn't catch up to me because the boat's always moving. Because, man, I've lived in Chicago, Mexico, Texas, Virginia, Chicago. I mean, I've gone around. And so the wreckage doesn't always catch up with me right away. But in AA, I stood still for a while. And I've been in Virginia now. My wife and I have been here for 22 years. So the wake is caught up to me. The wreckage catches up. And I think that's for myself. I can only speak for myself. Is that I stay sober long enough and I see all this bad, and this AA stuff doesn't work. My life's not getting any better. Blah, 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 because my life was a piece of crap. I was a piece of crap when I got here. I was a broken man when I came in the door. I'm not the same guy that walked in here 22, 23 years ago, whatever it is. I'm just not the same guy, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got desperate enough to try this process. And one of the things, and this is just for me, I'm going to read this for you guys, where it talks about we take a fearless and thorough moral inventory. It talks about morals. This is just big book dictionary that I bought online. It says, when it talks about morals, and this is just for me, morals, ethics, rules or habits of conduct, especially sexual conduct, with reference to standards of right or wrong. When I was a young man, sex played a very big part of my life. Now that I'm an old man, sex plays a very big part of my life. It still does. It doesn't change. So for me, in my case, I figured out going through this process, it's my pride, it's my greed, and it's my lust. Those are the main three right there. Pride's always number one. Greed and lust are right behind it. I've learned through the process of taking these inventories how to identify what's going on in my life. So when I call my sponsor, I can tell them, this is what's really going on, not what I want to tell somebody else that I don't know. Of course, to a stranger, I'm not going to admit it, but to my sponsor, it's a guy I got to tell the truth to. If I can't tell him the truth, who am I going to tell the truth to?
Thank you. All right, still on page 64. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We ask ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with?
Okay. Does your dictionary or thing there have a resentment? Just wanted to look it up since it's so important to us. I read one definition of resentment and it said to feel again, and that made sense to me. Resentment. Well, how the hell do you use this thing? Never mind, it's too hard. So resentment, here's what resentment looks like to me when I was drinking. I was in this relationship, and the person cheated on me. And so I was pissed off. I was really angry. And I'm drinking, and I'm getting madder and madder, and this person cheated on me. They broke my trust. They broke my heart, and blah, blah, blah. And so I go out and sleep with somebody else. Now that is how I dealt with resentment. That was just one little time I did that. You know, I just went out and and as a result of my resentment towards that person, you know, I did this thing, I got pregnant, a whole bunch of stuff happened behind the way I deal with resentment. And drinking, when I'm drinking, that makes perfect sense. Maybe some of you can understand what I did, you know. And that was the pattern of my life with resentment. If you did something to me, I got even with you. If you hurt me, I hurt you. If you stole from me, I stole from you. It didn't matter. And I am not a big dramatic drunk. I was a pathetic, mousy little drunk. But when I got alcohol in me, I could do really kind of brave things and foolish things. And that's what I did. Alcohol told me, do that. This is the way you feel better. And so feelings are, I'm all about feelings. I'm a feeling person. And for a long time I told my sponsees, I don't want to hear about how you feel. You know, what are you doing? But I've changed my mind on that too. I think that feelings are integral to who we are and why we drink and everything. And so resentment is a feeling. Resentment is to feel something done to me, a grievance, and to feel it again and again and again. So if you hit me when I was 10, I'm still thinking about it when I'm 22, 32, 42. And I get drunk and I think, that little girl, she hit me, and blah, 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 I wish she was here now. So that kind of stuff is, that's a real, real spiritual sickness. And what it did was it kept me in a place where nothing positive could happen. I couldn't grow. I couldn't mature. I couldn't be moral. You know, it told me, no, don't be moral. Get even. So resentments were very powerful. When I was drinking, the only recourse I had, because it was my recourse for everything, was to drink. Because alcohol truly was the thing that that showed me how to live and that got me through the day. And that it did everything for me. Alcohol was really, really important to me. It was my solution to life. I did not know how to deal with anything. These feelings, these thoughts, these actions, the things life throws at you, alcohol showed me how to deal with all of them. I lost a job, I got drunk. I lost a relationship, I got drunk. You know, it just, it was what I did. It was the only way I knew. And so I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and they tell me resentments will kill me and that I have to do something about it. And that process is to write down the thing I resent or the person or the place or the institution, and then I have to find out where I'm at fault. And I get resentments today. My most current resentment was at work. It's been kind of a worky day. So I have a coworker who keeps sending me these emails. She goes over my work to make sure I'm doing it correct. Don't you know I love that? And she's about 27. I'm, so anyway, other than the fact that she's going over my work and correcting my mistakes, I like her all right. But she shoots me these emails every day when I come in. Kay, you did this wrong. Kay, you put this in the wrong thing. Kay. And she always says my name in the email. I hate that. So I'm seething as I'm reading these emails. Like, damn it, why can't she just tell me? Damn it, why is she so blah, blah? You know what we do. I'm going over and over and over, and I'm really upset with her because my pride is hurt. My security is hurt. I want to look good at work. I want to be good at what I do. I want to be valued as an employee. So I want to tell her off and, you know, just put her in her place is what I want to do. And I came to this meeting one night in the middle of this, and they were talking about, I don't even remember what they were talking about, but the lady up here shared a work experience about a boss who had tried to help her, and she was resentful of him. And she had called him up after the event had passed, and he told her, he said, you know, I was just trying to help you. And I heard her that night, and I thought, maybe she's just trying to help me. And I asked God, I said, maybe that's the way I should look at it. And I went to work the next morning, I shot her an email, and I thanked her for helping me. She quit sending me the damn emails. I thanked her. I said, I'm not as quick as I used to be. I appreciate your helping me. I want to do a good job. Thank you for helping me do that. If something goes wrong now, she comes to my desk and tells me. So, but I needed, I mean, I've been sober a long time. I need to be reminded of this all the time. Resentment lives in me. So, you know, I'm not immune from resentment today. I can get a resentment over, I got a resentment over this group. My home group meets on Monday nights. You all get all the people. And I shared that at this meeting, I believe. But I don't really have that resentment. I joke about it. I kid. But resentment today is something that will kill me. I know today if I don't do something different than what I normally do, I will drink again. If I let that go, that feeling, maybe it's just a little thing, but if I let it go, it's going to build. And eventually I'm going to go to the solution that used to work for me, the solution that works if I'm not doing this stuff.
All right, it says here, resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. It doesn't say it kills them, it says it destroys them. Resentments have almost destroyed me now three times in the years, in the time that I've been sober. The first time, some skeletons came out of my parents' closets, and I just went off the deep end. And then once with my wife, I think it was, and again, just a couple years ago. And what it does is it cuts me off from the sunlight of the Spirit. I've experienced all the promises that it talks about in the book, all the spiritual awakening, the spiritual experiences. All that's happened to me. I tried diligently to try to live the AA way of life, sometimes militantly. That doesn't work too well. But I've really poured my heart and soul now because I love Alcoholics Anonymous because you guys have done something for me that nothing else has worked. So I'm a big fan. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I believe in the process and what we do because it's worked for me. I've seen it from firsthand experience, and I've seen it work for other men. I've only sponsored men over the years. So resentment destroys more alcoholics than anything else, and from it stem all forms of spiritual disease. I understand today that my alcoholism affects me body, mind, and spirit. And I was spiritually bankrupt when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had no morals, no ethics, no conduct of any kind. I was just a rotten SOB to the core. And that's the way I lived my life. And thanks to AA, I don't have to live like that anymore. But it was here that I learned how to identify those things. I was a very angry young man, especially in my early 20s. I got into a lot of bar fights. I liked drinking and fighting. It's just what I did. I didn't intend to be that way. It's just the way it turned out, you know. And when you take an angry young man, you pour a lot of alcohol into him. That's what happened. That's what happened to me. And so, and it says here, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. I can't wait to get my finances in order. I can't wait to get the girlfriend back. Because I don't know about you, but there wasn't a problem that I walked in the door of Alcoholics Anonymous with that I didn't think money would solve it. If only I had more money, I could take care of this. If only I had a better girlfriend, I could take care of that. And it was always these external things, never what I could do to change myself. Never did I once sit and think, man, what can I do to be a better person today? Just wasn't in my line of thinking, just wasn't. I swear to God, and to just about every newcomer I've ever spoken to in AA, almost every one of them, if they're honest, will tell you more money would be the answer to whatever the problem that ails them when they walk in the door. Because I felt that way. And so I've learned in AA that it ain't about the money. It's about gaining the spiritual experience. The whole process of what we do is helping us find a God of our understanding. Not the God, just a God. I found a God of my understanding in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's evolved over the years. It isn't the same thing that I walked in the door with, but it's something else now, and I'm glad it is what it is. And it's through this process that I found what I was looking for. I didn't know. When I sat at Bill's table, I didn't know that what I was missing in my life was structure and discipline. Just didn't know that. But when he offered it to me, man, I latched on with both hands, and I didn't let go for a long, long time because it worked. It worked in my life. And so further on where it says, in dealing with these, we set them on paper, I was taught that I have to write it out freehand or cursive or hand or block letter. No typewriters, no computers, no printers, no nothing. It all has to be in my writing, excuse me, and it has to be in pen. No pencils either. Because we don't want to erase anything that we put on there. If I wrote it down there, there's a good reason I wrote it on there. And then what we're talking about, and right away it talks about including sex. Again, I don't know about you guys, but sex plays a big part in my life still today. And so what we're going to do is we're just going to write out our grudge list. This is just a list of all the people that I'm mad at. And I was taught that if I get a spiral-bound notebook, not one of those composition books because they don't lay flat when you open them. Get a spiral bound and lay flat, couple pages, five columns. This is how you draw it out. And the first one was, I'm resentful at. And just skip about three lines and start writing names. That's all I got to do. That's my grudge list. That's step one in the four-step process. Get a spiral bound notebook, get a good pen, and start writing the names of all the people that I'm mad at. It's pretty simple. It's not complicated, but I thought, because I've had sponsors early on in sobriety that when it got to this part of the book, all right, kid, I need you to start writing. Oh, there's no need for that inventory stuff, man. Let's go have another cup of coffee, because I don't want to write this stuff down. I don't want to look at what's wrong with me, because I've been in AA enough times to know that this is kind of where the rubber meets the road. If you're really going to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's hard to be that without going through this part of the process, because you're really not part of the club until you do this. And there was a saying at one of my old home groups that, anybody that's done a thorough inventory will tell you that their chicken died in the end. And if you let that simmer for a little bit, did your chicken die in the end? My chicken died. All the guys that I know that were members of that group, we all admit our chickens died too. Let it simmer for a bit. It'll dawn on you. Thank
you. All right. We're at the bottom of page 65. We went back to our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, Do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again, and with us to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. I'm not sure if those all flowed in order. I read two readings together, so hopefully that was all together. Okay.
So, yes, the world and its people are often quite wrong. I found that out a lot. So what? You know, so what? It doesn't help me to do that. It doesn't help me to know that. It doesn't change anything. I don't want to die. And I don't want to live a life that is full of that kind of bitterness and fear and insanity. And I know that today. That doesn't keep me from feeling resentment. But it gives me something to do with it. this thing about it being a fatal illness, you know, sometimes I forget that. It's been a long time since I've had a drink. I don't feel, you know, like I'm going to die anytime soon from alcoholism. But it's a good thing to remember that. That's why we have sponsees, to remind us just how awful it was and how awful it can get again. But for me, you know, I don't know where I'm going with this. A life, deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. I have inventoried a lot of people. I've inventoried a couple of institutions. And my most recent inventory was on bedbugs. I have not shared this. And feel kind of creepy, but but my last inventory, I got bed bugs in my house, and I freaked out. I mean, I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown. I did all the stuff you're supposed to do. I called the exterminator. I took care of that. Blah blah blah. I couldn't get over the feeling that everybody was looking at me, and I was very very disturbed. I mean, I'm making light of it, but it wasn't a joke. I talked to some friends, and they said, "What's wrong with you?" You know, I said, "I don't know, but I can't get past this. I cannot get past it." So I wrote inventory, and I read my inventory to a friend, and she said, "Well, what did you find?" Because at the end of the inventory, you find out where you've done any harm. And I thought the bed bugs had done a lot of harm to me, but I found out that, you know, somebody brought those bed bugs in my house, and I had been to other people's house, and so maybe I had taken them to their house. And reluctantly, I came to the conclusion that I had to tell these people. Now, I go to a lot of AA people's houses, and I was not looking forward to this. But I said a prayer, and I went, made a list, and I went to each house, and I told them. And they were lovely, everybody. They hugged me. They said, "Don't worry. Thank you for telling us. We'll check it out." Nobody looked at me like, you know, I was creepy. But there was one thing left on my list, and that was I go to work every day. And I had to tell my employer. I called the person I'd read my inventory to. I said, "Well, I think I'm done." And she said, "You're sure you're done?" And I said, "Well, I thought maybe I had to tell them at work, but I don't think so. You know, I don't think that's necessary." And she said, "Well, do you really think that's not necessary? What if you got them at work? Nobody told you." I didn't want to do it. My pride was so involved. I was afraid the ladies I work with would talk about me, and I knew they would because I've heard them talk about other people. I was scared of what people would say. I was afraid of what my employer would think. But you know what? I don't want to live I want to be able to look people in the eye. And I felt really good about going and telling my friends that I was able, I didn't feel so, you know, strange around them, so odd. And I could look them in the eye, and I felt good. And I said, I got to have that at work, too, because if I don't, it's going to eat away at me, you know. So I called this person up the morning I was going into work, and she said a prayer with me, and I'll never forget it. She said, God, just scoop Kay up and take her and go into her place of employment with her and give her the courage to say what she has to say and help her remember that you're with her. And that helped a little. And I went in and I told my boss I had to speak with him. We went in his office. I told him. He hugged me. He said, hell, you probably got him here. And he said, don't worry about it. He said, we have an exterminator. I'll have him check. And this is between you and me. Nobody else needs to know about that. And as a result of that, and that was a really hard thing. I know maybe somebody thinks that wasn't, but that was a really hard thing for a drunk like me to go tell somebody something like that. Because I'm very invested in how you see me. I'm very concerned about that. And it was really hard to, and I was the one that had the wrong idea. I had the wrong idea about you all. I needed to know that. I needed to find that out. My ideas are frequently wrong. And that was a huge, huge spiritual experience for me because it was a hard thing to do. It affected my pride. It had a good outcome. That was nice. But it was really important because it took courage to do that. It took faith in God. It took belief that this program really works, that this stuff we're up here talking about tonight is a true thing. You don't just, you know, play at it. It's a real thing. It affects our lives. It affects my sobriety. It affects my spiritual condition. It makes me a useful person. The kicker, the really cherry on the top, is that it wasn't 2 months later, some little gal came to me at a meeting, frantic, because she had the same problem. And I was able to say, don't worry, I had the same thing happen, it'll be okay. Here's what you do. And I could say that from some moral authority because I did it. I wasn't blowing smoke up nobody's ass. I did that. And it shows when you do that stuff, and it helps people. And that was a great experience for me. Thanks for listening to that.
So it's apparent to this that this world and its people are often quite wrong. To conclude that others had wronged us is as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome is they continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. In my case, I'm only speaking of myself. When I did my inventory and my grudge list, as I look back and I took an honest assessment of my life, I can see where I did something to them first, the vast majority of the time. And then they retaliated, and that's the only part I remember, is that they retaliated. I always have that selective amnesia. Well, I don't know why he's always picking on me or whatever. Maybe it's because I'm always making a pass at his wife or stealing money out of his house or whatever. And so people are just doing what they're doing. They're not necessarily doing it to me. And I can only tell you this now that I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. People are just doing what they're doing, man. Life's not fair. I tell this to my kids when they were growing up all the time. Life's not fair. Get used to it. So what? Move on. What's the big deal? They're not doing it to me. They're just doing what they're doing. And so when I become so angry that it develops into resentment, and I learned the difference in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a difference between being mad, being angry, and having a resentment. It's three different levels. I didn't know that. I would just go from zero to rage, then pour some alcohol, and I'm fighting with somebody, you know? So, and it's plain that a life which includes deep resentment comes to futility and happiness. And then we found that for when harboring such feelings, these feelings of resentments, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit, the insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. The insanity of alcohol returns, and then we start drinking. It isn't I start drinking and then I go crazy. The insanity, and I'm telling you from first-hand experience, the insanity has come back in my life a couple of times in sobriety. Fortunately, and it was like at year 13, I went through this big deal, and when the skeletons came out of my parents' closets, that I made it back to Alcoholics Anonymous without picking up a white chip. Because people with that kind of time don't usually make it back when something like that happens, when we get these big resentments. And I'm just grateful that I did. Because I know a lot of people that get these resentments late in sobriety and they just don't make it back, or they make it back and just don't seem to catch on. So the insanity returns in my life, and then for me to drink is to die. So as long, again, and I said this right from the beginning, as long as I don't take a drink today, no matter what happens, I got a chance of making it better tomorrow. Everything that I do still hinges on that part. Because as long as I'm not drinking, I got a chance. It means I haven't lost my sobriety yet. Not completely. Maybe my mind, but not my sobriety. And then, did we read that? We haven't got that far, so I'll stop there.
All right. I can't see the clock, so okay. I'm going to read the rest. We have two more readings. I'm going to read them together so we can hear about column four. So we're still on page 66. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick, that we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us. They, like ourselves, were sick too. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes, where we've been selfish, dishonest, and self-seeking and frightened. Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. Okay.
There's a lot of power in that fourth column where I look at my faults. And it's the most difficult part of the inventory process for me. It's just really, really hard to see sometimes. The truth of what's going on. And that's, again, the benefit of having a sponsor who has done these things, these steps, and who can see us from a distance and can give me some perspective. I lack perspective about myself, especially. But if I'm diligent and if I persevere and look at that fourth column, I can almost always find where I'm selfish, self-seeking and afraid. Dishonest is the hard one. And setting aside the other person's fault. You know, nobody wants to do that. I don't want to do it. You know, you've done something to me, and I don't want to look at it. But if I search fearlessly, I can find where I've placed myself, what I need above everything else. And in order to get that, somebody has let me down or stepped on my toes or done something to me. And as soon as I can find out where I'm at fault, it's a huge relief, because then there's something I can do. I can ask God, you know, to help me with that. What time is it?
7:49.
Okay. Quick, and then I'll shut up. I have a niece that I used to... bribed to take my mother to the market because I didn't want to go. So I give her mom's credit card and send her off, and I didn't have to do it. La la la. I love that. Well, this niece is not an honest person. She's got problems, mental and otherwise, and I know this. I know it very well. And one day she took mom's credit card and spent $2,000. And they called me, and I was ready to kill her. And would have if I hadn't called my sponsor. And what I found out after writing inventory on it was that what she did was wrong. it wasn't about what she did to Mom. I was mad about what she did to me. I didn't like it. And I had made the decision to give her that credit card to do something I didn't want to do. And so I didn't get to be mad at her about that. I don't get to be mad at people for doing stuff I offer them to do anymore. But I have to find that out first. And sometimes the rage or the anger or the whatever takes over. And thank God for the telephone and calling someone when I do that. There have been incidences where I have not done that and it goes badly. But again, even when it goes badly, there's a process. I don't have to get drunk. You know, if I had been drinking, I would have gotten drunk and I would have hurt my knees. And it wouldn't have made any difference, you know, as a result of being sober and working these steps. I didn't have to hurt anybody. And I started taking Mom to the market and I got to have a wonderful experience with her before she died. I owe my niece big time for that. Thank you.
So it says we turn back to the list for Held the Key to the Future. I had a sponsor, Earning Sobriety, who said we're going to take it out back and burn it. And it just didn't sound right. I've never read anything in the book where it talked about burning my inventory. So we didn't do it. I had to find another sponsor. And then I had this guy who handed me, when we got to this part of the book, when the four-step, handed me this pre-printed four-step inventory thing that was more like a psychological review. I don't know what it was. This is goofy. Like, when was the first time you saw your parents naked? Yeah, it was really weird, so I didn't do that either. And I just kept going through sponsors till I found the guy who padded his big book at the kitchen table. And that's when I knew that's where I needed to be. So at the end of the day, in the angry prayer, that this is a sick man, how can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. I can't do that when I'm still seething with the rage or the anger. I have to be at peace before I can follow through with the rest of this. And I think the important thing that to keep in mind is we do these columns one at a time. For those of you that are new to Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't do the whole thing in one shot. We do the columns one at a time because then it gets my brain thinking in a certain pattern. And where it says, referring to our list again. Again, we go back to the list because from this list derives the rest of it. I get my eight step and my nine step list off of this. So if I burn it, there goes my chance of doing that. Because hey, it was hard enough for me to write it down once. You think I'm going to write it down twice? You know? And truth be told is, I found three inventories that are laying around in my house. They're just laying around. And I used to hide them like everybody else. They're just laying around, man. If my wife and my kids find them, so be it. It is what it is. Then I'm not going to look into my stuff, but they're there. Anyways, it says we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had Steve been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? If I can take and be honest and apply that to whatever else is going on in my life, you get some. I got some stark revelations when I did this, when I learned how to do this process. Unfortunately, I don't do it all the time. I'd love to sit up here and tell you that I do, life is perfect, and blah, blah, blah. This is not the way it works for this alcoholic. I stumble sometimes. So the inventory was mine, not the other man's. So it's never what they're doing. It's what I'm doing. They're just doing what they're doing. They're not necessarily doing it to me. So what am I doing? That's what makes the difference. Because I learned by doing this inventory process that I no longer have to give them the power. I was talking to one of the secretaries at work Friday. I was walking out of the office and she said, you know, I really hate that guy. He does this. And I said, you know why he does that? She says, no, why? She put her hands on her head. She said, no, why? I said, because you give him the power to do that. And she looked at me like I just hit her with a 2x4. And she says, what? What? I said, he does that because you give him the power to do that. If you don't give him the power, he can't do that anymore. And I spent most of my life giving other people the power to control me. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me, I don't have to live like that anymore. I can take charge of my own life. As long as I keep God up front, keep some sponsorship in my life, and stay active in Alcoholics Anonymous, it all works out in the end. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's the end of our reading on the first part of the session. I'd like to thank Kay and Steve. Okay, now we're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supported. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements?
I have one. Okay. My name's Evan. I'm an alcoholic.
Evan!
I have tickets for sale, $1 each, for a raffle for a free weekend for two for the 2016 Oceanfront Conference. And if anyone wants to buy one of those, a drawing will be done on July 14th. And I got them up here, so see me after the meeting. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. The International Women's Conference, as I'm sure a lot of you have heard, is next February in 2016. We are looking for female volunteers. Please, if you any amount of sobriety will do. If you are interested, please see me after the meeting.
All right. We're good on that. Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. And home group members, please raise your hand. Woohoo! Okay. And here's the most important question of the night. Newcomers, you really are the reason that we're here. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety that would like to introduce themselves by their first name only? Yes.
Bill, I'm alcoholic.
Hey. Hi,
alcoholic. My name is Antonio, I'm alcoholic.
Hey, Antonio, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. Sponsorship. Oh, wait. Before we do that, we've got to point out the literature table. Boom, boom. Over here. The paper items are free. The books are for sale. Please see a home group member if you're interested in buying one of the books. Now, sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. And we have two people, Stephanie and David, who will be up here at the table after the meeting if you have any questions regarding sponsorship, what it is, who they are, what they do, they'll be glad to answer those questions for you. Smokers, please use the butt cannon provided outside. Stay well away from the front door of the church because we have other meetings going on within the church. And we do record all of our meetings. We have a website where you can listen to those, simpleactions.net. There's also an email list on there that you can sign up if you want to get an email on any of our upcoming events. Supper and a speaker will be our next one. All right, and we're going to thank KNC one more time. Tables back for Vacation Bible School, so we appreciate some help. And then we also go to Plaza del Sol on Colonial and 22nd Street for the meeting after the meeting. If you're just ready to share your experience with the fourth step, we all have a good time here. And I need a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on 164. Stephanie.
My name's Stephanie. I'm
an alcoholic. Hey, Stephanie.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks, everybody, for coming out, and we close with the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Why?